Welcome to the Kol Hadash Podcast. This is episode 5 of season 14. This episode features the Torah reading from Kol Nidre, recorded live at High Holiday Services on October 11th, 2024. Is life getting better or getting worse? It depends what you compare it to. Compared to 500 years ago, things look pretty good. 500 years ago, the average life expectancy was only 30. One-third of children died before age one, and 3% of births resulted in the death of the mother. If you made it to your 20s, you would probably live to your late 40s. If you were an aristocrat, you could expect to make it to your 60s. Today in the United States, by contrast, life expectancy at birth is 77. Men 75, women 80. 99% of live babies celebrate their fifth birthday, and our maternal mortality rate is 0.03%. We live better and longer and more peacefully. Yes, despite all the violence in the world and in the news, we are much less likely to die violently than in our history. When I was in high school, I asked my history teacher, "In what era would you like to live?" And he said, "Right now, even if only for the dentistry." This high holidays, we have been fighting the feeling that we are doomed. When we feel like we might be doomed and everything is falling apart, we are not comparing ourselves to 500 years ago. We are thinking about what should be now, what could be now. Just a few years ago, before COVID, U.S. life expectancy was 2 years higher than it is today. And any maternal or child deaths are too many. Life expectancy is not the only metric for human thriving. How we feel is both subjective and real. If we take for granted how much better we have it today, we do not want to be smug and assume it will always be this way. To assume that life can track up or track even, but never tracks downward. To assume that what is always will be. We should also not forget that our success can coexist with other people's suffering. What was Jewish life like 500 years ago? In 1500 CE, in the Muslim world, we were tolerated minorities who had to limit how high we built our synagogues. We could not blow our shofars too loudly or show our success too publicly, lest we uppity Jews be put back in our place. In Christian Europe, by 1500, we had been expelled from England, expelled from France and from Spain. We had been pogromed out of most of Germany by crusaders and Black Death scapegoating. We were welcomed into the Polish-Lithuanian Empire, but there we lived at the tender mercies of the local duke or prince. We spoke our own Jewish language. We were squeezed between noble and peasant. We were the quintessential other. Jewish life today, 500 years later? Today we are citizens with rights. We are integrated into our national cultures. The courts protect our rights. The police protect our property and our synagogues. Politicians fall over themselves to condemn anti-Semitism, even to accuse their opponents of being anti-Semitic. For all of its challenges, there is a Jewish state as a haven and as an advocate, a source of Jewish cultural creativity, and a locus for Jewish debate. As we heard last night, various Jewish sects debated the Jerusalem temple when it stood. So too with Jerusalem today. Of course, we are not comparing Jewish life today with Jewish life 500 years ago. We compare Jewish life today with Jewish life just 15 years ago, or even 5 years ago. In the 1990s, just 30 years ago, it was the beginning of the Oslo peace process. A brighter future seemed possible for everyone in the Middle East. Two Jews were named to the Supreme Court in 2 years, and no one batted an eye. A few years later, Orthodox Jew Joe Lieberman would have become vice president if not for all those mistaken Jewish votes for Pat Buchanan in Palm Beach County, Florida. The presidents of Harvard, Princeton, and Yale were all Jewish. Beautiful new Hillel buildings for campus Jewish life were opening. The worst Jewish communal news of the 1990s was that too many non-Jewish people loved us and married us. Today, in the 2020s, intermarriage is old news. There's even a Netflix series about a rabbi dating a non-Jewish woman. Just got renewed for its second season. It's called Nobody Wants This, but evidently enough people want it that it got a second season. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict, well, that's worse than terrible. And anti-Semitism. And Israel and the Jewish vote. Now, I am not afraid to go anywhere in Chicago on Easter. I contacted our local police to let them know when and where our high holiday services would be held, and I received a warm and supportive response. In Detroit, when anti-Israel graffiti appeared on the offices of the Jewish Federation, the sheriff of Oakland County said, "If you come at our Jewish community, or for that matter at anyone in our Oakland County community, we will stand in front of them to protect them, and we will come for you." We American Jews are not living in 1500, nor in 1700, nor in 1938. We are certainly in hard times. 30 years ago, if someone had predicted we'd be facing all these problems in 2024, I would have called them a kvetch, a complainer. You may have noticed that certain among our people have a tendency to kvetch, to complain, to find something wrong with just about anything. We may no longer be the chosen people, we are surely the choosy people. All that kvetching, all that complaining goes back to an old Jewish problem. We compare the world to what it could be. After all, a perfect, all-knowing, all-powerful, benevolent God could solve any problem at any moment. As Woody Allen once said, if God does exist, he's an underachiever. Still, on the off chance that the Hebrew God would live up to his potential, rabbis created extensive liturgy to praise and petition and thank him three times a day, not counting all those blessings and Shabbat and the holy days. Traditional high holiday services are hours of flattery and apologies and requests and more flattery. The rabbis of the Talmud compared this world to the world to come, the days of the Messiah, a new Eden, as long as we pass the cosmic judgment. Life in this world could be nasty, brutish, and short. Yes, on Yom Kippur, we did hope to get sealed in the Book of Life for another year here, but in the end, Jewish religious thought admitted this world is less than we want, and it believed that the ultimate hope to do better was through supernatural intervention. I recall a story of a Jewish grandmother, a bubby, walking her grandchild on the beach. Along came a large wave that swept the child out to sea. And the bubby looked up to the sky and said, "God, if you're there, I know I haven't been to synagogue in years. I don't follow any of the traditional commandments. I don't even believe in you 3 out of 4 days in a week. But if you'll do something to save my grandchild, I will change my life and devote it to you." Another large wave crashes onto the beach, and there is her grandson. She looks up at the sky and says, "He had a hat." Now, a grandmother who can complain to God can complain to anyone about anything in any era. Remember, you may be paranoid, but that does not mean they are not after you. Our personality of being a stiff-necked people who complain, from wandering in the mythical Exodus to ordering in the modern deli, combine that with our history of persecution and our intergenerational trauma, they're all true. Yet it is impossible to claim that the problems we see today are only in our minds and not in reality, that they're simply the ghosts of Christians past. It is never good when public figures start dividing us into good Jews and bad Jews. For some progressive protesters, the good Jews are the ones who publicly denounce Israel and Zionism, and the bad Jews are everyone else, even the Israel critical, even those who promote coexistence and compromise, anyone who affirms any kind of Israel at all, anyone to the right of the righteous far left. That's a bad Jew. And for the MAGA faithful on the right, the good Jews are the ones who denounce DEI and liberalism. The good Jews support religion in public life, and good Jews are for Israel right or even more right no matter what. And the bad Jews, well, that's everyone else. For MAGA, the bad Jews are the synagogues that welcome the LGBTQ, the rabbis who fight for social justice, the Jews who support the separation of church and state and who care for the unfortunate and who love the stranger and the immigrant as themselves. Is an American Jewish golden age over, as some op-eds have proclaimed? Was it ever as golden as we thought it was? There were prices American Jews paid in their striving to make it in white American suburbia. Most Jewish immigrants who changed their names did not have it changed by a dumb immigration clerk at Ellis Island. Family court records in New York City show thousands voluntarily changed their family names to something less Jewish, less foreign, more American. The thought that the golden Medina, the golden land that had given them so much freedom from persecution and opportunity for peace and success, that this land would still hate them or limit them for their Jewishness, that was hard to swallow. Easier to blame a nameless clerk in family lore. The Anti-Defamation League was founded in 1915 after a Jewish man was accused of murdering a Christian child and then lynched. U.S. immigration doors were slammed shut in the 1920s, in part to keep out Eastern European Jews. Admissions quotas did the same for elite universities. Restrictive real estate covenants prevented Jews and other minorities from buying the houses they wanted into the 1970s. By the end of the 20th century, those limits were gone. Thousands of Jews from Israel and the former Soviet Union immigrated to the U.S. from the 70s through the 90s, and Jews moved into Kenilworth and Lake Forest. Golden Age was not absurd at all 30 years ago. In 2024, for all of our challenges, we have rights and legal protections and power that our ancestors never imagined. The latest Pew Forum survey of American Jews said it out loud in black and white publicly on the internet, so I can say it here. The Jewish population as a whole is doing well in America. 60% of American Jews have at least a bachelor's degree, compared to 30% in the general population. One-third of our households earn $150,000 or more in a year, compared to one-tenth of everyone else. Both presidential candidates have Jewish members of their nuclear families. Does this make us globalist elites, the MAGA enemy? Does this make us part of the establishment that radical progressives want to bring down? Yes and yes. Jewish success is like any success. Part hard work, part luck, part advantages, part talent, part mutual support. We will never succeed beyond envy and suspicion. And as long as we remain distinct, we can be a target for both. The first ADL survey of American Jewish antisemitism was run in 1964. Among other questions, they asked if people agreed with certain anti-Jewish tropes. For example, Jews have too much control and influence on Wall Street. Jews do not share my values. Jews don't care what happens to any but their own kind. The measurement for anti-Semitic was agreeing with six or more of those statements. In 1964, 29% of Americans passed that bar of agreeing to six or more. By the late 1990s, that went down to only 12%. And in 2014, on the 50th anniversary of that first study, it was only 9%. Today, in 2024, we are back up to 24%. We are not imagining it. Tensions over Israel are bleeding over into anti-Jewish hints and clear statements and threatening actions. Some of the most prestigious universities, the most progressive and diverse cities, have seen the worst anti-Israel protests that sometimes cross the line from criticizing Israel to advocating destroying it and its citizens and threatening other Jews in the process. The subtleties of critiquing Israel's actions while accepting its right to defend its citizens or simply to exist, the contradiction of supporting a Palestinian state while rejecting a Jewish one, those do not fit neatly into a chantable slogan. We must remember, we are not alone. This past May, Gallup asked Americans whether anti-Semitism is currently a problem in the U.S. 82% said it was a very serious or somewhat serious problem. Only 8% said not a problem at all. We are not alone. Thousands of people from other cultures and heritages have joined their lives to the Jewish people. Some have become Jewish, and their families of origin know it. Some have married someone Jewish, and their families of origin know it. In the early 20th century, American Jews had to start their own law firms and hospitals because others would not hire them. Today, millions of non-Jews work with Jews, or work for Jews, or employ Jews. This experience is not always smooth and easy. We have mostly figured out Christmas parties and Secret Santa, but there are still prayer circles and meeting scheduling issues. Some of you may know that this year I co-edited a book on contemporary humanistic Judaism. It will be published in January by the University of Nebraska Press and the Jewish Publication Society. Guess when the final proofed pages and index were due to the University of Nebraska Press? Rosh Hashanah. But we are not alone, and that has made things better. Some years ago, my mother was on a cruise ship, and she sat down with the people she was going to be sitting with the entire cruise for dinners, and her companion next to her said something off color, like, I went to buy the tickets for this trip, and I had to Jew them down. I had to negotiate it down. As my mother is about to leap on him with her full ADL fury, his wife smacks him on the shoulder and says, "You idiot, your son-in-law is Jewish." So who corrected him? It was his wife. His son-in-law is Jewish, not was Jewish, didn't convert. His grandchildren will have Jewish connections and Jewish family. This is positive change filtering backwards as well as towards the future. 100 years ago, in 1924, when immigration doors closed, 70% of American Jews were foreign-born. One American Jewish writer remembered thinking as a kid that when you got older, you grew into an accent, because everyone old had accents. In 2024, 90% of American Jews are American-born. And for almost two-thirds of American Jews, both of their parents were born here. We know the laws. We know the customs and the culture. We help write the laws and litigate the laws. We help create the customs and the culture. In September 1964, the same year that almost 30% of Americans held anti-Semitic attitudes, Fiddler on the Roof opened on Broadway. An early title for the show was Where Papa Came From, showing that immigrant generation. By fall 1965, Fiddler was smashing all the records, but a question was raised. Should Tevye take the stage on Yom Kippur? There had been plenty of Friday night and Saturday daytime performances, but it was Yom Kippur, and Tevye was a traditional Jew. And this was the same Yom Kippur that Sandy Koufax would not pitch in the World Series. Show producer Hal Prince, himself Jewish, put it directly. Tevye has made more friends for the Jews than Yom Kippur. And the show must go on. Today, many Jewish actors and actresses keep their Jewish names and wear their Jewishness publicly, even grappling publicly with their challenges related to Israel or Jewish tradition. If our Jewish disagreements today are more public, that is a sign of being rooted, of feeling comfortable enough to air our dirty laundry without fearing being sent back somewhere else. Certain fields, like creative writing, for example, have seen definite problems. Exclusion, being canceled, litmus tests, that good Jew, bad Jew challenge. And similarly, some university departments and colleges as a whole have been more conflicted or less conflicted for Israeli or just Jewish academics than others. But in all of those circumstances, we are able to seek allies, and we are not alone. Could it get worse? So far, the phrase "globalize the intifada" has largely been a slogan or a motivation for graffiti. It could get worse. It could always get worse. A fair part of Jewish culture is based on the assumption that it could always get worse. The past is not always prologue. History does not always rhyme. We can ruin the present by fearing the future. This high holiday season, we have faced our fears that we are doomed, that everything is falling apart, and we have found reason to hope, actions to take, attitudes to assume in response to these challenges. Perhaps the best piece of advice I can offer, something not deeply rooted in Jewish culture, is this: calm down. Maybe it will be worse, maybe it will not. Being miserable in anticipation makes it worse, no matter what happens. This school year, campus protests that crossed the line into advocating violence have been responded to much better, though the widening conflict with Hezbollah and Iran will have ripple effects. If Israel attacks the Iranian oil industry and gas prices go up, who will be blamed? If Israel successfully shifts the balance of power by weakening Iran's proxies in Lebanon and Gaza and Yemen, will that lead to increased cooperation with those who oppose Iran? At this point, we cannot know what the future holds for them or for us. We can prepare for a possible worse tomorrow without ruining today. As poet Wendell Berry put it in The Peace of Wild Things, "When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free." I wish everyone here a year of health, of happiness, a year of peace, a Shana Yoter Tova, a better year in this new year.
Thank you for listening to the Kol Hadash podcast. To learn more, support, and membership to Kol Hadash, visit kolhadash.com. To learn more about secular humanistic Judaism, visit shj.org.